Well, that was Charles Mingus, and this is Fresh Air. You're listening to WUHY-FM in Philadelphia, and it's 1 minute after 4 o'clock. Coming up on Fresh Air, we speak with three bartenders live in the studio about life on the other end of the bar. Well, that was Frank Sinatra, and I think that the song suggests why I've asked three bartenders to join us this afternoon on Fresh Air. I mean, they do get to see it all. They watch us get drunk and act silly or be morose, and they see men picking up women and women picking up men. They see attractions and rejections. They get to witness quite a bit. Three people are in the studio with me now. Bill Murphy, who tends bar at Smokey Joe's Cafe, which is a bar right near the university, the University of Pennsylvania campus. He's also worked at a neighborhood bar in Haverford called Roach and O'Brien's. Also in the studio with us is Carson Ryanier, who's worked in many different places, including in Philadelphia, Cafe Society, the Zanzibar, Bill and Lou's, and for 6 years he managed Sugar Ray Robinson's bar in New York. He's presently retired. Also in the studio with us is Ken Persing, who now attends bar at the Commissary, which is a pretty chic center city restaurant and bar. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
I'd like to start by going around the room. I'd like each of you to give your name, state again where you work, and just describe for us how you see yourself as a bartender, like what personality type, you know, you think you'd fit into when you're attending bar. Bill, can we start with you?
Right. Bill Murphy, and I do work at Smokey Joe's a lot of the nights downstairs. I see myself as a combination between like a fraternity brother to a lot of people that come in, to almost, I think, someone that has to exert a lot of control, a lot of authority, influence over the people that come in. I don't know. It's difficult. You have to be a good-natured type of person. But I think, especially in downstairs and Smokes, where we get a lot of people, you have to maintain authority to be somebody that people look up to be somebody that people would like to try to be like. It's a test to keep a good mood for sure, but to also be strong.
I'm Carson Ryanier, as you've been informed. I'm retired, but as for my attitude towards people, I've always called myself a cosmopolitan. I think I'm congenial. I try to be nice. And experience has taught me that the average clientele of a tavern is a very amicable person. But as you drift through it, you'll find that it's involved a whole lot of complexities individually, but on the whole, it's a wonderful education and a beautiful job.
My name's Ken Persing. I work at the Commissary. I think the persona that I most successfully broadcast is out of a doorstop, because I try to be fairly benign about the whole thing, otherwise it begin to take it too seriously. And I think I'm fairly successful at that, keeping a very low profile. And we don't have the problems with rowdiness, because the place I work in tends to filter out the ratty people. It's the clientele's fairly elegant, and no one comes in to... Well, generally people do not come in to get morose and sit and drown their sorrows, because the prices are high enough that if they want to get morose, they can stay home and do it. So that's about the size of that.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about some of the situations that frequently happen at bars. Let's start with this. I think a lot of people come in sometimes just... you know, have a beer or a shot of something or another and just, you know, want to talk, but they've come in alone. And do they want to talk with you? Does that frequently happen that someone comes in and, you know, just wants to strike up a friendly conversation with the bartender? Carson, you've been in lots of different places.
Well, yes, I can answer that. So usually a patron at a bar, he comes in more or less, especially in the evening after work. He wants to relax a few moments. He wants a beer. In the meantime, he's had an experience doing the job, and he's anxious to get an opinion on it, or not necessarily looking for sympathy, but to analyze his own doubts and things. And this is beneficial to him as well as me. I enjoy it sometimes.
Do people get really personal? You know, they're coming in, they want to talk to you. How personal, in your experience, Bill, has someone gotten at a bar?
Well, I think that my experience is a good one, in the sense that I know a lot of the people that come into Smokey Joe's regularly. I live with people that have bartended Smokey Joe's, and people have been really good customers. So I do get a certain amount of inside information that way. But as far as people coming in and being personal, I don't find that as much. At Smokey Joe's, we seem to have people coming in looking to maybe meet a girl or to meet some of their friends. The bartenders maintain a little bit of a distance. We don't get involved too much unless we know the people very well. It's something that I think comes with having to do a lot of moving around. We don't get a chance to sit and talk to somebody for that long of a period of time. But also I think we try to remove ourselves a little bit from the intimate conversation, let the people themselves handle most of it.
You know, you're in a different kind of situation, Ken. Do people come in alone frequently and expect to strike up a conversation with you?
Well, the nature of the place is such that the turnover is fairly rapid. It's a cafeteria with a bar in the same quarters. And it's a lot of hit-and-run business. People just serve. It is as though I was running a service bar. They just come up and get what they need and sprint off to find a table somewhere. But every once in a while, someone will start to get into a conversation of some depth. And I'm not always certain how to handle it. This one guy came in last week, and he's been in a few times. I've spoken to him on and off. And out of the blue, he comes out and says, I just broke up with this woman that I've been living with for 5 years. I said, I'm sorry to hear that. He goes, oh, it's all right. We're going to play tennis tomorrow. You know, now, why did he tell me that? You know, how was I supposed to respond to this little tidbit of information? And I wound up not
responding.
I wound up pardon me, I've got to deal with something else here. I just, you know, this was a cue. This was a verb. This was an introduction to a conversation that had teeth in it, and it just kind of dribbled it away. And I didn't quite know how to respond to it.
How would you respond to something like that, Carson? When someone tells you something that's obviously really big and important to them, are you going to excuse yourself or stand there and nod your head?
Well, normally, when you approach like this, and you will be invariably, at least once a night, someone will come up to you with a personal problem. And you try to be congenial, but you must curb it because it's too personal. Your opinion was asked, but it's really not appreciated. So as a consequence, you just shrug it off the best you can and try to escape from that area.
It's not appreciated. You mean people mostly want to talk, they don't really want to listen?
They want the endorsement of their opinion.
Are you going to give it to them, or just...
This is why it's a delicate situation.
So you're just going to be
Because if you can't...
Non-committal.
You goofed. And if you're impolite, you're rude. If you ignore it, you're indifferent. So, I mean, you're a bartender, you see. You're not supposed to do anything but you're a servant of the public. And if most bartenders would just remember that, it's not your position that's important. It's a service that you render to the customer. Because you're only a servant when you're a bartender.
When someone comes in and they're, you know, one of these, like, really garrulous people who just, like, talks and talks and talks, and, you know, whether you're listening closely doesn't really matter as long as, like, you're physically near, how can you disentangle yourself from something like that if you really feel like you've spent more time than you should have with this individual? What are some of the ways of just moving on politely?
I think one of the best things to do is to try to generate some kind of conversation with a third party so that you can get out. If there's somebody that knows a person, it's sometimes tough on that guy, but you can just say, well, this is John over here, and, you know, John, what would you like to say to him, Dr. Ernst? And, Dr. Ernst, we'll be able to talk to John. Dr. Ernst, you know, really wants to get in there. He wants to say something, wants to get it off his chest, and maybe not necessarily so much to me, but just to somebody or other. And I find that I can generate some type of conversation among the people as a group at the bar, and that's hopefully there are other, you know, friends around, then it's easier for me to disentangle myself. I'm just part of a group then. It's not me and Chip or somebody else one-on-one.
Well, the ads are usually fairly well built in the place I'm at because the volume is such. I can usually go sprinting down to the other end to take care of somebody who just wants another, you know, drink and then is going to leave immediately or start stocking the bar or something like that. There's always plenty to do. You can maintain that pretense of being busy, and it's a fairly handy way of disengaging yourself from some noxious situation.
And another way I find to extract yourself, you always leave a couple of dirty glasses.
Just and like
you,
home.
When you remove when you remove a drink, your customer's left, you pick the bottle up, and you're sitting on the bar instead of putting it down in the drink, because you see this problem, this person's going to give you a problem. You understand me?
Mm-hmm.
So in order to extract yourself without offending him, you say, well, excuse me a moment, I'll take care of this. But in the event that there's someone sitting alongside of you, and most people in the bar cannot help but overhear a conversation. So if you really want to get the weight off of you, you would say to them, well, that's very interesting. But what is your opinion, sir? Mr. So-and-so, this is Mr. Brown. What's your name, sir? Mr. Jones, this is Mrs. Reynolds.
Uh-huh. So, like what you were saying, so you introduce people at the bar to one another. Do most people, when they come in and want to get your attention, want to, like, complain about something? I mean, does that, anyone ever come in and say, oh, you know, great things have been happening, and just, like, you know, really lay on you wonderful things? Does that ever happen?
Well, people don't always have complaints. Some people do have things that they're very proud of. I mean, they're exhilarated. They've had an unusual event that happens, and the bar seems to be the first place. Maybe he just came in for that. Communication. See, he wants company, and he comes into the bar, and he gets a beer. He's probably not an alcoholic, but he wants to explain to you that yesterday his wife hit the lottery for $50,000, or a good friend of his in New York. He heard from somebody in Connecticut last night he hadn't seen for 10 years, and he's overwhelmed because he thought they had a difference. And there's different things as you come in. Well, his uncle may have died. See, all these things happen to you. And you're just the same as a priest.
But you don't pass judgment, right?
Oh, no.
No Hail Marys.
Yeah.
No Hail Marys, you know? But this is the position that they assume you're in. You're a fellow who you're out here in the world. You're supposed to know all problems.
What are some of the big topics of conversation nowadays? What's everyone talking about?
Sports. Smokey Joe's.
The most significant program in the world.
Love sports at Smokey Joe's. And there's a great deal of attempt to analyze the sport for more than just the performance of the athlete itself. But to really get in and try to understand professional sports. It seems to be a great way to spend time. There's a lot of people that come into Smokey Joe's that have had experiences with sports, played sports.
As a participant, also as a contestant. Yeah, that's right.
Sure.
Yeah.
And,
mostly sports. Well,
it's a game too. People love games. It's something where the outcome isn't assured. It's a challenge. You know,
there's a fair amount of sports, I guess, at my place too, which I have a really hard time with. It's moments like that I begin to wonder if I'm in the right business. Because I hate sports. I don't know who played. My wife reminds me who's doing this series, and I discovered to my dismay in the last series that she was a confirmed baseball freak, much to my disgust. But there's one crowd that comes in, and they seem to be, they are appearance junkies. It's just incredible. The latest moisturizer and the Calvin Klein jeans and the $3,000 furs and all this. And it's just the endless machinations about, you know, well, what did you do to your skin and all this stuff? And
so a lot of talk about cosmetics and clothes.
Lord.
What about business? A lot of people coming in to just, you know, at least for the first half hour they're there, you know, until they get it off their chest, talking about work.
Yeah, a lot of, we're right directly adjacent to the stock exchange, and there's a fair professional crowd that stops in, and I find their jargon almost undecipherable. I just sit there and nod my head semi-intelligently until it passes, and then get back to something a little more pedestrian.
Many people go to bars to pick other people up. I mean, now there's single bars, official places where you can go, expressly designed for the purpose of finding someone to take home with you. But there's, you know, you don't have to be an official singles bar to either, you know, and just walk in with the express intention of picking someone up, or just hoping, well, who knows, maybe you'll find someone to pick up. Okay. You see a lot of that going on, Carson, when you were attending bar?
Well, I'll tell you. Normally, it's not typical of a bar, but as you say, occasionally someone will come in, and maybe just got lucky. He's got a few bucks, and he wants to hang out. I mean, he's invariably a married man, and he's looking for a diversion. And he'll even ask you, "Who's that girl over there? And what's her name? And who is she married? And where does she come from?" You know, and you're not at liberty to tell him this. You know, I generally tell him, I say, "Well, sir, I have never had the pleasure of meeting you. This is the first time I saw this lady. I could have saw her every night in the week. I could see her every night, but that's not for me to say." Yeah. But they will come in and they'll approach you about, women too. Women will say to you, if it's a musician on the stand, "Do you know him personally?" And I'll have to say, "No, I'm sorry, I don't know him." "Do you think he's mad?" And things like this. Now, this is a... But if he comes off the bandstand, we've had him to come off the bandstand and stop and ask me for a drink, this particular musician. And she'll say to me, "Can you introduce him to me?" And I'll have to look at him and I'll say, "Well, would you like to meet the young lady? You know, and what's your name?" Because I don't know. But these are the things you run into.
If someone say a man comes in who you know, I mean, you know him well enough to know that he's a married man. Mm-hmm. Are you going to see it but not see it? I mean, is that something that you would surely never pass on?
Oh, this is unwritten law. You don't see anything when you don't hear anything, and you don't see anything when you tend, if you want your job. You don't hear anything, and you don't. If you don't approve of it, you might tell him to himself confidentially. But you don't show any indication of this to anybody. Because what you heard in here, even a policeman won't ask you but so much.
Is that the same experience both of you have had?
Well, I think that one of the great things about Smokey Joe's is that there are a lot of women that come in the place now. And it's good for business, I think, and I think it's good for the atmosphere of Smokey Joe's. It's good to see, dancing going on, I think, to see singing, real interaction between men and women, and it happens a lot at Smokes. I think that the beer helps to loosen everybody up a little bit. When people become a little bit less inhibited, they're more willing to go out and make overtures.
So you're saying more single women are coming in now than before?
I think so, yes, and they're coming in groups, and also
a lot of times if a woman goes someplace on her own, whether it's a restaurant or a bar, single men around there just assume that she's, coming to pick someone up, which surely may not necessarily be the case. Have you seen that happening where a woman has had to either, verbally or non-verbally say, forget it, I'm really not here to pick somebody up, just like, go away?
I've seen it happen, sure, and I think that a lot of times it's not really the man's fault, but there have been cases where men have come up and tried to buy drinks or to influence their own ideas on women. Women are really good. They just say, get away, or buzz off. I've never had to really interfere in any way. The women seem to know how to handle the problems pretty well.
Mm-hmm. So you've never had to protect someone from someone else's advancement?
Lost virtue.
No.
It seems like the one case that I can think of where there have been a few, actually, where women have said, listen, I'm not interested or something. And it's all been very, very low level. It just seems like low level at all costs, and it's just no one is going to depart from polite conversational levels. It's like you lose the game if you do that or something.
Mm-hmm. And have you ever picked anyone up while you were attending bar? I mean, we're all talking about, this objectivity. You don't pass judgment. You don't see anything. You don't say anything. But say someone comes in who you're kind of interested in. Ever done any of that?
Well, I mean, I'm a normal individual. I was single. Of course, if I find someone attractive, and I find a possibility of having to take out to dinner or something while doing my break, certainly I would. I mean, I'm not going to say differently. But it's not very seldom. It's very rare that you meet someone like this since you're exposed to the public at all times. But occasionally someone will come in who seems sort of sophisticated, demure, and attractive, and you may extend yourself a bit to cultivate her acquaintance, yes.
Bill, yourself?
I think that especially when they come to Smokey Joe's, tend to really trust the bartenders in ways that they don't trust the customers. They'll be open and free and easy with the bartender right off the way. And that gives a sort of a responsibility, I think, to try to get to know the women, but also to get to know them kind of in a professional way, to maybe introduce them to people that we know, to be more of a friend or a catalyst toward them having a good time, but certainly not to try to actually pick them up ourselves.
So you see yourself as someone who's like needed to be reliable and shouldn't be.
Right. If I was to try to like say pick somebody up when I was working, I think that if a woman had been pretty open and free and easy with me right off the bat, she'd probably be kind of offended. She'd think it would be just a wrong thing for me to do.
An abusive power.
Abusive power, maybe.
Well, I found my own performance in that realm colored slightly by the fact that I'm married and
right.
Expecting it. It slows you down a little bit, yeah. I think I had that that fantasy when I started this job that the women would be oozing up to the bar at all times and just sort of, coming on to me left and right. I'm still waiting. I must be doing something wrong.
Okay. So have you seen any techniques, change any new techniques people are using now to pick one another up that are new to you?
Disco.
Disco. Disco? Is it?
Disco.
What do you mean? Asking someone to dance or just
asking
going to a disco?
Dance. Uh-huh. Sure. It's a great way. It's a lot easier than talking. You just have to go out there and move. And it's something that that both men and women seem to like to do now. It's not that hard. It gets people up off their feet, and it really does. I think it, you know, gets the group interacting in a very real way without even having to say anything.
What's the classiest pickup you've ever seen?
As the gentleman said, now even the jukebox was a great innovation with bars. It lessened formality. For instance, if you were going to an ordinary bar, we're not saying a sophisticated bar, just a neighborhood bar, and neighborhood wouldn't be right. I mean, just a popular bar. Let's say a popular bar, but not a sophisticated bar. And the best way, when the people come in, they singles come in, women and men, they have a common thing going. They come out to enjoy themselves. They like music. And maybe even a woman will get up and put a quarter in the jukebox if it's not playing. And she'll play a number. And I'm sitting there, and when these two numbers are finished, if I find a track, I'll get right up and play that same number. Now, this is telling her right away, I like her taste. You understand me?
Mm-hmm. And you're not saying a word,
I'm
right?
not saying a word. Uh-huh. Then if I ask her for the dance, she'll get up and dance. You understand me? We may not even say a word. I might not say, what's your name, Eleanor? What's your phone number? But in the course of the evening, if we find that one refreshing, we'll keep you stimulated by that and encouraged to pursue the affair.
Okay, that's an interesting approach. If you're just tuning in, I'm in the studio with three people who do or have tended bar. My three guests are Carson Ryanair, who is now retired but has tended bar in many places, ranging in Philadelphia from Cafe Society to the Zanzibar. Bill and Lou's. For 6 years, he managed Sugar Ray Robinson's bar in New York. Ken Persing is also in the studio with us now. He now works at the Commissary in Center City, where he tends bar at this restaurant and bar. Bill Murphy is also in the studio, and he tends bar at Smoky Joe's, which is pretty much of a university bar because it's right near the Penn campus. Well, let's move on here and talk a little bit about the alcohol itself that you deal with at bars. What about beer? What are the real popular beers that, you know, seem to sell the most now?
Well, first of all, draft beer is really popular. I think that just the fact that there are now easy taps that you can get, which means that just about everybody can get draft beer if they want to. I think it used to be that you could only get draft beer in bars, but now fraternities can get draft beers. You can get draft beer for a party at home if you want to, and it's a way to really easy way to have cold beer around. And I think that at least I've noticed in the last few years, more and more people drinking draft beer. Budweiser is a very popular draft beer. Miller is now a very popular draft beer. But all the major beers have a draft, and I think they sell a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. What's the popular beers for you?
Well, the choices are pretty much preordained. At our place. We only handle two different brands of beer. One's Rolling Rock, and one's a German beer called Würzburger, which nobody seems to be able to pronounce. So they wind up ordering Rolling Rock.
Oh, I thought that might make them want a fancy one. You know,
I'll take that
big
foreign
names
one.
Have that fancy ring to
or
it.
Or they just point to it.
Uh-huh.
So there's no great diversity of choice there.
Well, I'd like to add to that. In the normal bar, people who classify a bar as A, they come in not only to be present, but to impress you with their taste. And they will ask for things like Löwenbräu, never heard of it, hard to pronounce it, but some fabulous beer. And after they get it, you can tell they never had it before because they don't like the taste of it. And the first thing you know, they'll come in and say, well, give me a muscatel and some ice, you know? But this is to impress everybody that they have elegant taste.
Mm-hmm.
But the popular beer today seems to be this light beer.
Right, the stuff with less calories.
The stuff with less
calories.
A lot
of requests for that.
Do you get requests for that, too?
Sure.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's
both bottles and draft.
As I say, I would go on a weekend sometime. You know, people call me up, he wants to go away for a couple of days, will you fill in for me? But this light beer, and I don't understand people's taste with it, because I taste it, and I would rather have a cold cup of tea saturated with coffee.
What about what I imagine is the bane of the bartender's existence, the mixed drink, which you have to fuss over and mix? A lot of people order mixed drinks nowadays.
There's a lot of theatrics in that. There is that element of the population that comes in and tries to impress you with their taste, and they ask you for some obscure nonsense that they know you don't know how to make it, and they just delight in sitting there going through chapter and verse about, well... shake it over the ice. Not too long. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't melt too much and all this. And it's like part of the show for them getting a drink is the text, the accompanying text that goes with going up to the bar and asking for it, you standing there like a dummy, and then bailing you out.
Well, and then again, the average mixologist, he can tell from the client what it tastes like. If she asks him for some outrageous, like a rum buoy or something, he just puts some rum in a glass and give her some Coke and throw a little color in it and hand it to her. Oh, this is delicious. Put a cherry on top of it. It's nothing. It's just for fun.
Does that ever happen, though? You know, they say you order, like, the best scotch in the house or mm-hmm. something. Have you ever been in a place where the best scotch in the house is actually a cheap scotch poured in a very fine and expensive brand bottle?
Well, not in Pennsylvania because of the Liquor Control Board.
It's a good way to lose your license.
You hear what people ask for if you have it. That must be in that bottle. Now, take his place, his spot. The average customer he has will say, give me a scotch and soda. He doesn't say, give me a White Horse. He doesn't say, give me a Hague and Hague. He says, give me a scotch and water. Now, occasionally, some people are for name brands. But when a person comes in out the street and comes up to you and says, I want a Hague and Hague on the rocks, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you're pouring him, you tell him that's 2 1/4, he don't drink no more of them that night. Don't drink no more.
Okay, what about tipping? When someone sits at the bar, they're expected to leave a tip, right? No?
Not in my opinion, no.
An unqualified maybe.
No.
Our place is sort of peculiar in that it is not a cash bar. So there's no money changing hands on a regular basis. So, if anybody tips, it's purely elective. I mean, they don't have the money out to begin with. It's sort of like eating at the place that I work is akin to playing Monopoly. You just run around with this card and you get check marks made on it, and then you pay as you leave. So there's no money.
I know that there used to be a tradition where people would want to show their appreciation by buying the bartender a drink. And I think that, at least among the people that I know that tend bar, there's a real effort on the part of bartenders to try and not to drink, and to try to drink these, certainly not while not drinking on the job. So if someone would like to show appreciation, we'd much rather, instead of them trying to buy us a drink, maybe leave their change or something like that when they
do
leave.
Do people do that? I mean, do many people leave change for you?
Sure. And we don't get big tips, I don't think, on the whole. But it only takes 4 quarters to make a dollar, and it'll improve service for a person if he comes in, leaves a quarter. It's not expected, but just subconsciously, I know, just somebody that leaves a little remembrance. It sticks in the mind.
Mm-hmm. What about, if someone really has spoken to you, like if you've really paid attention to them and listened to what they were saying, do you think that should somehow that their gratitude should be shown in the form of a tip? Would you expect that?
No, as a rule, the person who talks you to death, you don't expect anything from them. Now, as a rule, when you're speaking of tips, the average customer, if he has, there was 4 of you drinking, it's usually 2 couples, and they're drinking, and you've given them courteous service and kept the ashtray clean and kept the bar dry and gave them a doily and everything, even when they least expect it. But this is so they'll encourage them to drink that drink up and get another one. This is a technique that a bartender uses to sell more whiskey. But at the course, even when this tab is over, say each one of them has 2 drinks, well, that's a normal tab, $8.50 or something like that. Then I'll give you $10, and usually they don't wait on any change. You see? Or he might buy a beer, which is 85 cents. He leaves down a dollar. See you later. Well, you ring it up, and you turn around, and a lot of people disdain 15, but like the man said, 4 quarters make a dollar.
Okay, so...
And if you're in the course of the evening, if you're in a pretty decent bar, you'll make gasoline money. You make gasoline money, and you can also get a sandwich, you know.
Bill, you said something about, people try to buy the bartender a drink, but you would just as soon not drink when you're tending bar. You both agree with that, Carson?
Oh, yes. The average bartender will decline the drink and say, well, I'll take mine when I get off.
Uh-huh. So you tried not to drink when
tending. You will. That's right. You must. In other words, if you want to drink, you got a state store. I would never offer a bartender a drink. He can drink anything he wants back there. Or else I wouldn't work there. If I can't have a drink on a bar when I work there, at any time, I don't need the job.
People think it's absolutely riotous when I pour myself a glass of milk and nurse that for 20 minutes.
Well, this is what you
like. I get the same reaction at home, though, so.
Yeah, this is what you like.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about when someone comes in and it's pretty clear that they've had a bit more than they can handle, either physically or emotionally. What becomes your role as the bartender there in terms of either, you know, have you ever refused to serve anybody anymore? Just tell them you've had enough and you're not going to get served anymore here.
I refuse to serve the first drink.
To who, an alcoholic?
So, well, if his attitude and if his demeanor isn't proper, no, I refuse it. I just say, well, later, sit down and relax, you know. You don't need any now. I'm sorry. Of course, this goes into a thing because he's feeling his oats, you know. But he can talk all night. You don't have to serve him. And then you invariably have a manager, somebody who'll show him out if he becomes obnoxious. But you really don't have to serve anyone that you consider, even if they're not drunk, if they're a nuisance.
But what's your, you know, just as far as alcohol consumption, what kind of things would you look for to say, well, this person's had enough and I'm just not going to serve him anymore? No, because he might just, like, not be able to walk very straight, but you might think that's your business or that that's not your business.
Then you slur your words, and you have a blare in your eyes, and you're not positive where you're at, only that you're there. This is indication enough to anybody to see that you're over-invited.
So you'd stop serving a person?
Oh, I wouldn't serve him the first drink, or her.
Okay.
But you're only asking for a problem.
Ken, what about you? Have you ever
Yeah, I've shot a few people down, but it's usually couched in some elegant phrase, you know. And I know I'm fairly secure in the knowledge that the managers will stand behind my decision. But it's not a comfortable position to be in because this is supposed to be, you know, elegant time and all this. And someone comes in with half a load and you have to say, listen, enough's enough. I've never gotten to the point where I've refused somebody the first drink. Somehow that would be even harder somehow. It's like you're entitled to one mistake or something.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had to make that distinction yet. But as far as someone coming in and being loud and boisterous and leaning on other customers and giving them a hard time, yeah, that's happened. And it's strange to have to exert that authority. I don't enjoy it.
I don't either, because sometimes I work between, on 12th Street between Market and Philbert. Now, you know, each bar is adjacent to each other. And they'll sit over here, and they'll have four, and they'll run over here, and they'll have two, and they come over here. By this time, he's in no shape at all. First place, sure. You're sitting there in a stool, the standing room only. He's going to lean all over top of you to get attention, knock your drink over. You understand me? And expects to be served. No, this is what happens. Lean over top of each other, upset the beer, and don't want to pay for it if you say anything mm-hmm. to him. So build a drink on a person, the bar can be responsible for that. Did you know that?
If sure, you know, I discovered later
you
on.
You can be responsible for that. So the best thing for you to do is tell him, I'm sorry, buddy, you had enough.
Bill, where you work is pretty much a university bar, and a lot of the people there are finally at the age where they can get good and drunk legally at a bar and probably, you know, refer to that as a source of pride a lot of time, that, oh boy, you know, last night I was so drunk, I, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, where do you come in there and refusing, if ever, to serve anybody, you know, more drinks?
Well, there has to be a hard line taken if somebody is really creating a problem, if they're infringing on the good time of another person. And each situation, I think, is different. I don't know. There's any way to describe a person that has had too much to drink, only to say that he's making it a bad time for other people that had been having a good time before. One of the good ways to try to keep people from getting in bad moods or getting in fights is for the bartender to be in a good mood, to be vibrant, to be moving about, to be creating an atmosphere that's positive, that's good, maybe telling a joke or two.
Mm-hmm.
But there are definitely times when somebody has to be cut off, and it should be done quickly. But
what about the stuff like the own personal safety? You know, like, you know, somebody's got to drive home, and you know they're not causing the disturbance. You know, they're not insulting anyone, they're not spilling anything. You're just a little afraid if they have one more to drink that they're just like not going to make it.
Well, this is a case where you have to use your own judgment.
Yeah.
Now, as you say, this does happen. He set maybe the person will sit on the corner of a bar from 8 o'clock until 2. And doesn't say anything except, have you met this person?
He points to his drink.
Mm-hmm. And doesn't say anything. And sits there. Now, you know, since 8 o'clock to 2, and he's drinking on average every 15 minutes.
It's a lot.
He's loaded.
Yeah.
See, so you have to use your judgment then. When he asks for a drink, you just ignore it for... I've even watched the clock on him, half hour. I've watched the clock on him.
Sounds like babysitting.
You have to do it.
Underage drinking. How careful are you about who you're going to serve? Now, I know I'm still getting carded in some bars around here, and that's really a source of frustration, you know, as far as I'm concerned sometimes. But, you know, on the other hand, it's the responsibility of the bar mm-hmm. to make sure that they don't serve anyone who's underage. How carefully will you check someone when they come in?
Well, I had two tykes come in. I guess it was St. Patty's Day, and they wanted packaged goods, which we're not allowed to dispense in the first place. It's just the nature of the license. And between them, I don't think they were old enough to drink, if you added up their ages. So I went through this ridiculous game for a while of trying to say as elegantly as I could, I'm sorry, we don't have that. You know, they were asking for just, you know, it was like Sunoco Premium or something. It was just the dregs of alcohol. They ran through a list of stuff that I haven't encountered since I was 15. And I finally said, listen, we're both going to get in trouble if we do this. Get out, you know, please leave. And they did. They just hustled themselves out the door, which was a great relief to me. That was about the close. Well, I wasn't going to serve them in the first place. But to have to stand there and remind them that they weren't 21, uh-huh. and I wasn't going to do anything. It just seemed kind of ludicrous.
Bill, this is one that particularly refers to where you work, again, at, you know, near a university.
You really had the power.
You can't drink till you're 21 here, and sure. half the university population is under it, and most of them want to go out drinking to a bar. And some of them are going to look their age, some of them look younger, some of them are going to look older. Who do you ask for proof?
Well, I don't ask that many people for proofs. We have a couple lines of defense at Smokes to try to keep people out that are underage. We have doormen on the job all the time, and that's the first line of defense. They dress just like the bartenders in white suits and ties and have a very responsible job. They have to just about check everybody that comes in. And we, as bartenders, try to look for groups of guys, mainly, because if they are underage and they cause any problem, then we're going to get in trouble. So we try to keep our eye on the guys most of all. We don't have much problem with the women that come in. For the most part, they're of legal age to drink, I think. So we try to look for a group of guys, you know, because you'll have two or three guys with cards that are 21 years old, and then the rest of the group is underage. So we try to keep our eyes on the groups and try to control it that way from the bar.
Carson, what's been your experience?
My experience has been just the opposite of his. I mean, occasionally a young man will try to come in, but it's usually the girl 18 or 19, and she's perfectly personable and everything else, but you realize it's the liquor control board, and this is your job. Now, when you ask them for identification, you've never seen such indignity in your life. You know, and ask it the way they answer you. But when you refuse them, about 20 minutes later, two guys are walking to you, and I've had this happen, two guys walking, how come you didn't serve my sister? And the answer is simple, then she don't have an age card. Well, she's married, she's got two children. I said, it doesn't say that on her license.
Right.
It doesn't say that. And a lot of times, the bartender's really put on the spot with that. But as in your case, you have, it's wonderful that you have this. Because, boy, you've been sweating all the time if you didn't have a receptionist at the door.
The doorman is a great
thing. I don't envy you your job at all.
It takes a lot of responsibility off the shoulder.
Carson, have you ever turned the other way, you know? Have you ever turned the other way, you know, when you thought that someone was...
No, I've even... Now, I'll tell you what I will do. If one of my friends come in, and he has a person that I know is a... I will serve her ginger ale.
Mm-hmm.
Or mix her a drink with a cherry in it, you know? But there's no alcohol in it. And if she's satisfied with it, she can stay.
Okay. Jukeboxes and televisions. Which is on and when? How does that work? Who controls it, and what are the consequences of it? Let's start with you, Carson.
The jukebox is a proprietor's best bet. Anybody who owns a bar don't have a jukebox, he can forget it. Now, when the television comes in, you see, you cannot make rules and regulations between a jukebox and a television, because the television is free. And the man who owns the place is not making any money other than serving you drinks. But when that jukebox, every time you turn around, somebody's putting a quarter in. So naturally, the jukebox is king. And the jukebox is a drawing card except with sportsmen in it. You know, when there was a big prize fight on or something. People leave home to go to the tap room to discuss the event between rounds, preferably men, a prize fight or a football game or a baseball game like the World Series. But no sooner than you start it, two women will walk in out of the street and put a dollar in the jukebox and then get mad at you because you don't turn it up. This is the same in every bar.
So now it's your job to solve that squabble, right?
No squabble. The management says the jukebox will be played.
Oh, so the TV, because the jukebox brings you income, so the TV is expendable.
You can see the picture, but you don't hear no sound.
What if it's the big fight, you know, it's like the prize fight of the decade?
I've seen the prize fight of the decade in the bar. And you can't get a seat, but you can't hear the fight either.
Bill, what's your experience?
Is this true or false, gentlemen? You can't even hear it.
It's definitely true. A lot of people come in just to hear music, I think, more than anything. Just to get in a good mood through music, and a bar is a good place to listen to a lot of popular songs. I love to watch the sporting events. Even when I'm working, I like to have the TV on. And a lot of times, though, I can't see the action because I'm doing something else. So if I, you know, I can't hear it, I can't really, you know, figure out what's going on. And I know there have been a couple times when we have been able to turn the jukebox down a little bit. The Sphinx Ali fight was one where we did have enough people in the crowd who wanted to watch the fight that we were able to turn it down and have that dictate. But for the most part, the majority of the people want to listen to the jukebox, and they're going to tell you what they want. And
what are they listening to now? What's the biggest tunes that are played over so many times each night you think you're not going to be able to just stand it anymore?
I think I've heard only The Good Die Young probably, let's see, 10 times for, 6 months that it's been around.
You know all the words, yeah?
The Catholic girls have much more fun, I think, is the way it goes. They start too young.
What else is played a lot?
The disco songs are popular. All the Saturday Night Fever songs.
Still.
Very, very popular. I think, too, that any Frank Sinatra that you have on the jukebox is going to be popular as the alternative. But right now, disco is really king. The disco beat, you know, Saturday Night Fever and the boogie songs. Really
maybe soon the king will be dead. Well, the closest I've ever come to music at the bar was somebody sneaked in a transistor radio to listen to the ball game once. I heard this muffled voice coming from underneath a hat. It was Charlie McCarthy and Edgar Bergen.
Well,
no
do
music.
That.
It's the place I am, so.
Yeah, they'll do that. I've even been into, as he says, I've heard the jukebox playing and fellas bringing these portable radios. And they got nerve enough to turn it on, you know, and try to drown out the jukebox. All these things happen in the bar. And then when you say something to them, well, I don't like that song. Well, I say, whoever played it, put a quarter in it. Well, give him back his quarter. They've even said, give him back his quarter. So, you know, he goes, out he goes. You know, he goes out.
Can you think of, like, the most unusual or one of the most unusual experiences that has happened to you while attending bar?
I was an awkward third in a pickup one time. This couple came in, and the woman left her date in the other room. There's a deal where if you're seated in the other room, you don't see the bar. And she whisks by this guy who's seated at the bar and whispers something in his ear. And he immediately perks up and starts talking to me about how she said how cute he was. So she goes back into the other room with her date and arranges with me to leave her a note that says, I think you're cute also. I say, yeah, sure, what the hell. So he leaves. And I got cold feet. I'm thinking, well, what am I going to do? I'm going to go in there with this note, like some sort of idiot messenger, and plunk this down on the table and say it was left by the man at the bar. You know, and what am I going to do if the male decides to take umbrage with my appearance? So I backed down. The guy came in the next night to see what had happened. And when I told him I chickened out, he was very angry. And hasn't spoken to me since.
Did you apologize? Are you apologetic?
I said, yeah, listen, I just backed out. I couldn't see myself getting into this business. And he just kind of grunted and left. So that was the end of that.
Carson, an unusual experience?
I don't know. I've had quite a few in my life, but I can't think of anything that I could, at this moment, but I'll think of one that was really awkward before it's over with.
Okay. Bill, any strange experience you'd like to share?
Well, I think that...
I understand some of these are probably not discussable in public medium.
I've had a lot of experiences that have been strange in the sense that good things have happened because I've gotten a chance to meet other people. And I think the fact that when I first came down to Philadelphia to work, I was coming from Bryn Mawr, needed a place to stay. And it turned out that the person I ran into that I was going to live with turned out to be one of the Smokey Joe's best customers. All the roads were leading there together. And things have been unusual. I think that they've worked out really well. I've gotten to just meet a lot of people. I've been able to continue living in the city and enjoying myself, but broadening my perspectives through working at one place. All sorts of people that come in, different experiences.
I endorse what you just said because, as I said, I found a bartender's job very interesting, stimulating, because you do meet so many interesting people, and you can have a casual conversation with a person, even suggesting that maybe you're interested in a top coat or something, and you just happen to casually mention it, and he'll say, well, I know somebody down there. I'll say, go down and mention my name and see a song, and you'd be surprised how much you save.
Mm-hmm.
Well, go down and tell Saul that Johnny sent you, and tell him you work here, you benefit so many ways, even socially as well as economically.
You know, in a way, I guess that you really get to see people at their best and at their worst. I mean, at their best because it's an evening out. If they're, you know, mm-hmm. coming to your place for an evening out and they're well-dressed and they're away from the pressures of work or of home. On the other hand, if someone has drunk too much, you have the potential to be seeing them at their worst. Can we just go around the room once more and maybe talk a bit about how bartending has affected your general view of human nature? a grand theme to end this discussion on.
Well, there are times when I'm standing there. I wish I were sitting. It's just, the whole place strikes me as a gigantic fantasy land a lot of the times. Because the place I'm at, you are more prone to see the better side of everyone. And they're all coming off work in their three-piece suits, and they're all slicked out and ready to roll and stuff. So I just find it hard to believe sometimes the amount of posturing, the amount of just garbage conversation that goes on. Mm-hmm. And you can really feel that apart from the mainstream of life, there are seldom any children in the place. And definitely best behavior.
So has that made you cynical? Or?
Well, I think I was pretty cynical when I went into it. So.
All right, okay. Bill, how has tending bar affected your general view of human nature?
Well, I think that people more than anything want to have a good time. They really do. They don't want to bring their problems into a bar. They don't want to discuss maybe their problems with the bartender. It doesn't have to be drinking at 3, set them up again, Joe. It's disco at 11:30. Maybe I can meet, somebody to go to homecoming with, that type of thing. I'm impressed, I think, with the way people can have a few drinks, open up, and really enjoy themselves. It's tough for me sometimes to really feel like I'm apart because maybe I've had a bad day or I'm in a bad mood, and then all of a sudden it's 11:30 and the crowd's in there and I'm having a good time too. It's a back and forth thing, but it reinforces, I think, the idea that I'd much rather be happy, much rather enjoy myself, and I think that's what people look for when they come in to have a few drinks.
Okay, Carson.
It's odd that I have always found the work fascinating. I've enjoyed everything that people do. And when the evening's over and you don't have time to get exhausted because it's so pleasant. And several times in life I've sat down when I relaxed after the bar was closed. And I might even say I'm so grateful for an evening of enchantment, an interlude of ecstasy, because you can benefit. People are so nice as a rule. People are so nice, and as I say, some are frustrated, but most of them are polite and congenial. And they know how to treat you. They treat you like you're somebody. And I think everybody's ego likes this.
Yeah. Okay, I want to thank you all very much for being here this afternoon on Fresh Air and for sharing some of your experiences with us. I've been talking to three people who have tended bar. My three guests have been Ken Persing, who now tends bar at the Commissary, a restaurant and bar in Center City, Bill Murphy, who tends bar at Smoky Joe's, which is right near the Penn campus in Philadelphia, and Carson Ryanier, who's now retired but has tended bar in many different kinds of places, including in Philadelphia, Cafe Society, the Zanzibar, Bill and Lou's. He managed Sugar Ray Robinson's bar for 6 years. Thank you all again very much for this conversation this afternoon. Well, that's it for this afternoon's Fresh Air. Tomorrow afternoon on the show at about 4 o'clock, we're going to be joined by Roberta Dickinson, who was a transsexual. Roberta joined us on the show about 2 years before her operation, when she was still a man and was beginning to publicly cross-dress and began taking hormones before the operation. Tomorrow afternoon at 4, we will first hear a 12-minute excerpt of the conversation that we recorded in our studios 2 years ago, and then we will talk with Roberta Dickinson about that transformation from male to female. I hope you can join us tomorrow afternoon. The technical director for this afternoon's Fresh Air has been Joyce Lieberman. Fresh Air's production assistant is Danny Miller. My name's Terry Gross. I want to thank you for listening. Have yourself a very good evening.
This is listener-supported public radio, WUHY-FM in Philadelphia.
Good evening. From National Public Radio in Washington, I'm Bob Edwards.
And I'm Susan Stamberg with All Things Considered.
Smart, quick speculator gets ahead. The decent, thrifty man perishes. It's the cruelest tax on old age and people on fixed incomes that was ever devised.
Inflation, says author Theodore White, is not only tough on the pocketbook, it's immoral. Tonight on All Things Considered, analysis of President Carter's anti-inflation program.
It's a bit like an insurance plan with the government trying to guarantee that a worker won't be an inflation loser. But a former state insurance commissioner says he's not buying the plan.
The president has asked us to join the plan voluntarily. We'll learn how to sign up and see what's in it for us if we do.